I'm Marty Moscow. Wayne, welcome back to Radio Times. I'm a very good tipper. That's largely because I worked as a waitress many decades ago and know how hard it can be to provide good service. A number of expensive restaurants around the country are getting rid of tipping and incorporating a service fee into the price of a meal. It's not a trend that's exactly sweeping the country yet, but it does raise some questions about why we tip servers and the people who cut our hair and park our cars and carry our luggage to our hotel rooms. Our guest Michael Lynn is an authority on tipping. His research reveals some fascinating dynamics at work between the tipper and the tippee. He's a professor of consumer behavior and marketing at the Cornell University School of Hotel Administration. He has published dozens of papers on tipping, and he joins us from the studios of Cornell University. And Michael Lynn, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So how'd you get interested in tipping?
I paid my way through school waiting tables and bartending, so I depended on tips.
And are you a good tipper today?
I have to be because I do these kinds of radio interviews and people always ask me, and it'd be embarrassing to say no.
So, of course, you're a very, very good tipper, right?
Yes, yes.
But do you think tipping is sort of coming under question now? In preparation for the show, read a number of articles, including one, the New York Times restaurant critic, Pete Wells, said that tipping was irrational, outdated, ineffective, confusing, prone to abuse, and sometimes discriminatory.
Wow. It's certainly true that right now there seems to be a lot of attention devoted to the negative aspects of tipping, and a number of people, including myself, have called for its elimination.
But why?
Goodness. Different people have different reasons. My own reason is that I think it's probably a net drain on social welfare. Most people tip because they want to avoid the disapproval of the server. And that means they're not really getting anything for the money they're spending, right? They're just maintaining the status quo. If there were no tipping, they would still avoid the disapproval of the server because the server wouldn't have that expectation. So that's my main reason, is I think that mostly tips are paying off someone to avoid disapproval, mistreatment.
You're saying because we feel guilty, that's why we tip?
That would be more self punishment. I'm saying that we care what other people think of us. Mm-hmm. And because we know the server expects 15 to 20% of the bill and will be very unhappy with us if we don't give that, we go ahead and do it.
But the server doesn't know until the end of the end of the meal whether they're going to get that 15 or 20%.
That's correct. And I may never see that server again, but it's human nature to care what people think about us.
But we do. I mean, I don't know how long tipping has been done in this country, when it seems like it's the hospitality industry, it's the service industry, but it seems like it has pretty deep, long roots in this country. Why is that?
Well, first off, tipping became popular in this country really in the early 1900s. I've just been doing a bunch of reading of going back a history of etiquette and etiquette books from the 1800s, 1850s, 70s, 1900s, 1920s, etc. And what you find is that prior to 1900, people didn't talk about tipping in etiquette books at all. 1900 to 1910, people start talking about tipping, but it's mostly in the context of tipping household servants. When you go visit a friend, your visit entails extra work for their household servant, so you should tip them out. And that's essentially, we borrowed that custom. It's called veils in England. But your Americans traveling abroad picked up on that idea and brought it back. And it really is only in the after 1910 that you start to see a whole lot of tipping outside of that context. I'm finding some references to suggest that we've been tipping railroad porters for a long time. But tipping really isn't as old, at least as far as it being a really common occurrence. It isn't as old as you might think.
But it's interesting. When you go to Europe, it's often, you know, service and clue, which is that there really isn't a lot of tipping, especially at restaurants, when you go to European countries.
That's true.
Why do you think that? I mean, it's interesting that we see a bit of a divergence there.
Yeah, it is interesting that we picked up tipping from Europe and have taken it much further than any other country.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you, and that's Michael Lynn, an authority on tipping, and we are talking about the pros and cons, the ins and outs of tipping, and we want to hear from you. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Are you a good tipper? Does it matter what kind of service you get? Do you vary your tip based on that service? And if you have worked in a restaurant or perhaps at a hotel, you could talk about some of your tipping experience as well, and that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. One of the things that you have found in some of your research, Michael, is that service and the size of a tip really are not connected, that there's a sort of a disconnect between the service someone receives and the kind of tip that they give.
That's almost right.
Well, go ahead. Fix me up here. Go ahead.
Okay. There is a relationship. When I stand outside of restaurants and interview customers and ask them to rate the quality of the service, tell me how much their bill was, and then how much they tipped, I find that those people who rate the service better do, in fact, leave a higher percentage tip, just not a whole lot higher. Mm. And if we do create a measure of how strongly related these two variables are, tipping and service, the correlation there is 0.2. What that means, correlations can range from zero, no relationship, to one, meaning a perfect one-on-one, perfect prediction relationship. 0.2 is obviously much closer to zero. Also, what that means is that about 4% of the differences in tips left by different dining parties can be explained by their perceptions of service. 4%. It's statistically reliable. It's not a chance effect. People do tip more for better service. They just don't tip a whole lot more.
And when it comes to better service, let's say you're the person who's your server. Let's say she's quite attractive. Is she going to get a better tip than someone that might not be quite as attractive?
Yes, especially from male servers. From male customers.
So it's I know that you've looked at some of the interactions about how a server perhaps introduces themselves, how if they touch someone's shoulder, that there are all sorts of subtle things that can happen that can have an impact on the tip.
That's right. We've done experiments where we've had waiters and waitresses randomly, based on a coin flip, assign their customers to one of two conditions. I'm going to squat down next to the table or remain standing when I interact with them. I'm going to touch them lightly on the shoulder when I deliver the check at the end of the meal, or I'm not. I'm going to write thank you and sign my name on the check when I deliver it, or not. I'm going to introduce myself by name. Hi, I'm Mike. I'll be serving you later this evening, or not. And all of these behaviors, squatting down next to the table, touching the customer, introducing yourself by name, writing thank you on the back of the check, all of them substantially improve the tips that customers leave. Why? Because they all create some social connection between the server and the customer.
Even just the sort of very light or gentle touching of a shoulder, let's say, that sort of cements a bit of that relationship?
Absolutely, yeah. We touch people that we like. And so when you touch someone, the server's communicating, hey, I like you. And we tend to reciprocate those feelings.
Have you looked at sort of, you know, broadly speaking, who are better tippers than others? You know, either men or women, older people, younger people, different racial groups. Have you looked at that?
Wow. Yes. Wealthy people tend to be better tippers than non-wealthy people. Men and women, today, there's not much difference. There's some evidence that if you're talking about waitresses, men will tip a waitress better than women will. But if it's a waiter, women will tip the waiter better than men will. There are race differences in tipping. Whites are better tippers than African Americans in this country.
And why do you
on
think,
average.
And why do you think that is?
I don't have a complete explanation. I know that it's partially because of education and income differences, but that's only a very tiny portion of it because I can control for those things, and I still get large black-white differences in tipping. It's perhaps in many cases a reflection of differential service. That is, servers may deliver poor service to black customers. But I know that that's also only a tiny portion of it. First, as we've already mentioned, service doesn't predict tipping very well. Mm-hmm. Secondly, even when I control for service or even when I find groups of blacks and whites who perceive the service as the same, I still find differences in tipping. The single best explanation that I've come up with so far is that there are black-white differences in awareness of what's normative or expected. When I ask people, how much are you expected to tip waiters and waitresses in this country? 70% of whites will give an answer in that 15 to 20% range, but only about one-third of blacks will. So whites are twice as likely to be familiar with what's the dominant tipping norm in this country.
It is interesting when you think about who generally gets tipped, and perhaps it is more the hospitality industry, the service industry. There was an article I ran across about whether and that some people actually do tip flight attendants. I mean, to be honest with you, that never crossed my mind. But it is interesting to think about which jobs we tend to tip for or give gratuities to and which we don't.
Right. And there's very little research on this. There are only two studies that I'm aware of. Both of them find that we tend to tip those service providers that we have a stronger social connection with. If there's face-to-face contact, you're more likely to tip someone than if there isn't. The more you come away feeling a personal relationship, a subjective sense of liking of the person, the stronger the likelihood that you would leave a tip for a person in that occupation.
So the idea of someone, you know, is cutting your hair or giving you a massage or cleaning your hotel room or serving your food, that kind of thing, that there's a kind of interpersonal relationship involved in that transaction?
Exactly. And more so than the car mechanic, for example.
Even though the car mechanic obviously is working on your car and hopefully making your car better and safer than it was.
Yes, but it's often done outside of, you don't see the car mechanic. You're interacting with a clerk at the desk who's not the same person who's working on your car. And because the car mechanic never interacts with you, you don't have a relationship with them. So you don't come to like them or care for them that, you know, in the same way that you might care for someone who's cutting your hair, especially someone who's cutting your hair that you see over and over again. But the other factor here that we know based on research is the bigger the income disparity between the server and the customer, also the more likely you are to have tipping.
Well, listen,
and that's probably why we don't tip doctors or dentists.
At least not yet. That's Michael Lynn. He's a professor of consumer behavior and marketing at the Cornell University School of Hotel Administration. He's an authority on tipping. That's what we're talking about today on Radio Times, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Also emails at radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll be right back.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY and is proud to announce that Chester County Hospital is now part of Penn Medicine, extending the resources and knowledge of the Academic Medical Center to Chester County. To learn more, chestercountyhospital.org/penn.
The Delaware Art Museum supports WHYY and presents American Moderns, 1910 to 1960, from O'Keeffe to Rockwell, October 12th to January 5th. From nostalgic to avant-garde, this exhibition highlights changes in American art and culture in the early 20th century. A preview event on October 11th from 8 to 10 p.m. will feature music from the jazz age to early rock and roll, cocktails inspired by past decades, and unique food pairings. More at delart.org.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, lifting a ban, Turkey allows most women to wear headscarves in government. A woman who wears one explains why she sees this as separation of church and state. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
supporting WHYY, The Economist, covering news and ideas that interconnect the world to give readers a worldview. On newsstands, in bookstores, at economist.com, or on smartphones and tablets.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We've been talking about some of the pros and cons of tipping with Michael Lynn. He's a professor of consumer behavior and marketing at the Cornell University School of Hotel Administration. Joining us now is Daniel Patterson. He's a San Francisco chef and restaurateur. In fact, his restaurant, Qua, has eliminated the gratuity, the tip, and replaced it with an 18% service charge. And Daniel Patterson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
So why did you want to get rid of tipping at Qua?
We didn't get rid of it. We never had it to begin with.
Ah, so why did you never have it to begin with?
Well, basically, according to the law, a tip is something that legally belongs to the server, and the restaurant can't do anything with it. And so using a service charge, you get to distribute the amount that comes in to your staff however you see fit, basically. And what we wanted to do was, rather than 100 to 0, change the ratio a little bit, so our servers still definitely make more than the cooks do, but we share that amount amongst the staff, so there's a little bit more equality is maybe the wrong word, because it's not
balance.
Completely equal, but just a little more balance.
And was that the problem that you saw? Was it that the people in the kitchen, in a sense, were not cooking the food and doing all the preparation, that they weren't getting the kind of gratuity or even extra income that the servers were?
Yeah, the farther you go up the ladder in terms of price, the greater the discrepancy becomes. So the discrepancy might not be as great in a diner or a place where the check average is lower. And as you get to a place where people are spending more and more money, then it becomes a greater and greater discrepancy. And then you reach a point at which the servers are making, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 times as much as the cooks are. But, you know, this is a system that I've done since my first restaurant in 1994, so it's not something that's very new to me. We were, at that time, inspired by Chez Panisse, uh-huh, who had a very similar system. They changed over just a couple of years before. And really, as much as anything else, it's an acknowledgement of the fact that a restaurant is a team, and everyone in the team participates, and so it makes sense that they would also participate in sharing that aspect of it.
Did you, I'm assuming you had servers who probably had worked at other restaurants where there was tipping, did you have to convince them that this was going to be a good way to for everyone at the restaurant?
No, we've never really had that issue. I mean, definitely the people who are only concerned about money are not going to be right for our restaurant. We do pay everyone very well. So the other thing with if you're a server, you walk in and you're paid a low hourly amount, and then your income really is dependent on what people leave you. So it goes up and down. We pay everyone the same amount. So when they walk in the door, if we're slow or if we're busy, they make the same amount. So they're able to basically treat it more like a professional job. Like I know what I'm getting paid, mm-hmm, and it's a sufficient amount. And we also pay the cooks very well for by industry standards. So it really kind of just works out for everyone.
Well, Dana, hold on 1 second, because I want to get to Michael Lynn back in on the conversation. And Michael, I know this is a trend. I'm not sure it's sweeping the country yet, but nonetheless, a trend in some of these high-end restaurants to have a service charge. Do you think does that make sense from your perspective as an authority on tipping? Michael?
Wow. Sure. I don't know what to add.
Mm-hmm.
it does make sense because there's this huge disparity in the income of front of house and back of house staff, servers and cooks. And that can, and that, when that disparity gets large enough, it creates friction and conflict and makes it difficult to manage the restaurant and to retain back of house staff. So by having a service charge and making the pay differential smaller, that facilitates the operation and management of the restaurant. And you can ask and wonder whether or not that also eliminates an incentive for the servers to deliver good service. After all, their income now is independent of the quality of service they're delivering. I've done some research. In Miami Beach, Florida, for example, about 40% of the restaurants have eliminated tipping and replaced it with service charges because of the large number of foreign guests there who don't tip according to U.S. standards.
That's interesting.
And I was able to get Zagat ratings of service and see whether or not those restaurants that have service charges deliver better service than or worse service than those that have voluntary tipping. There is a relationship. Restaurants with voluntary tipping do deliver slightly better service, but it's not a huge effect.
Well, Daniel, let me go back to you. And did you find that customers leave a tip anyway?
I would say the majority of them do, yes.
Just something, I mean, a small amount, but something that I guess acknowledges the fact that someone had, that server had served them their meal?
Yes. And then that gets shared amongst the service staff as well. But, you know, I think it's an interesting idea, this cultural construct that out of all of the professions in the world, servers are the ones that need to be motivated by a tip in order to do a good job. Like, if you just pay them a wage, there's no way that they're going to do their job well. And I have no idea where this comes from, except that it's grown up around the culture of tipping and the way it's interacted with restaurants and the way it's created a subculture of restaurant workers. But the fact is that I think if you get people who are passionate about hospitality and they're dedicated to what they do, the fact is they want to do a good job. And the other aspect of that is that we have managers, and the managers manage the staff. It's true in the front and it's true in the back. So if a server doesn't do a good job, we fire them.
Hmm.
You know, it's not like we're going to allow servers to police themselves and let their performance rise and fall based on their moods, what they think they're going to get tipped. Because there's this whole other world where people start to, once your livelihood is dependent on this very arbitrary idea of tipping, then what happens is you start to, let's just say, categorize certain classes of people. These people tend to tip better, I'm going to spend more time with them. These people tend to tip worse, I'm going to spend less time with them because even if I take really good care of them, I'm not going to get compensated as much as this other category of people. So I think there's a lot of really interesting things around it, assumptions that people have, which we don't have about other professions.
Well, I think that's a really interesting point. And Daniel Patterson, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. He's a San Francisco chef and restaurateur of Qua, and it's spelled C-O-I. It's a 2 Michelin-starred restaurant in San Francisco. In fact, has a new cookbook out called Qua, Stories and Recipes. Michael Lynn's staying with us for the rest of the hour. We're talking about tipping, and he's a professor of consumer behavior and marketing at the Cornell University School of Hotel Administration. Our phone lines exploded at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get, looks like Stephanie from Huntington Valley to join our conversation. And Stephanie, go ahead. You're on the air.
All right. Hi, thanks so much for taking my call.
You're very welcome. Go ahead.
So I basically all of my working life have been in the food industry / customer service and waitressing and all that kind of stuff. And so I have a myriad of, you know, stories I could share that kind of went into me picking the factors that would determine my tipping system for when I'm a customer.
Right.
And I try to be very, like, I guess I would say I am very understanding because I honestly think I'm a very good waitress and I kind of almost allow for, I mean, they have to be really bad for me to give a low tip, because I know, you know, A, they rely on probably the more tips are the majority of the money they're making, and I know what that's like to, you know, be a waitress and putting yourself through school and all that kind of stuff. And I also think it's just really important to, you know, it's kind of, if someone's almost a rude waiter or waitress, then I'm kind of like, well, how hard is it to really be super nice, even though people are kind of treating you like crud? Because I kind of dealt with, you know, you deal with a lot of that being a waiter and a waitress, and so you're kind of doing the whole going out of your way, even though, you know, people are kind of barking at you or being rude to you. And, you know, I had to do a lot of just putting that aside and
doing
what needed to be done.
Yeah, let me take your point and actually put it to Michael Lynn, because I think she really beautifully describes what it's like to be a server and what it's like to be a customer. And I think Daniel Patterson touched on this as well, about the sort of complicated, nuanced interactions that are going back and forth. And, you know, in many ways, we don't know each other when you're either a customer or a server. But there's some interesting dynamics at play. Can you talk a bit about that?
I'm not sure where you want me to go with it. but let me just point out that one of the reasons people argue that we have tipping, and why it's not sufficient to have managers who would fire servers who do a bad job,
right,
is that it's very difficult for management to tell whether waiters and restaurants are doing a good job. For example, I prefer to eat and to be left alone. I mean, I want the server there to be prompt in delivering the food and taking my order, and I want them to be available so I can flag them down if there's some problem or I need a condiment or something like that. But otherwise, I don't want them anywhere near me. I want to be able to have a private conversation with the people I'm interacting with, I'm dining with. Other customers would prefer to have a chatty, interactive, more sociable encounter with the server. A manager observing the server's interaction with me could perceive that server as being inattentive when, in fact, they're doing what I want them to do. Okay? And so it's because different customers want different things, and management doesn't have any insight into that, it's very difficult for them to tell whether a server is doing a good job on a case-by-case basis. And arguably, that's why we have tipping, because the customer's in a really good position to make those evaluations and to reward the behavior.
Let me get back to our callers. Looks like we have Paul from Newtown Square. And Paul, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Love the show, as usual. And
thank
I wonder
you.
when you were a server, and what was the standard rate, 10 or 15?
But, oh, gosh.
I came from
10.
England, and we just didn't have it, or we had very little of it. So, you know, I was young when I came here. And so I had no idea what to tip, and then kind of slowly. And the first feeling was kind of a bit of a resentment. I thought I was underwriting the costs of these underpaid people. I thought that most of the restaurant and cafe owners were underpaying their staff, weren't giving them a living wage, and so it was my responsibility to bring them up to a living wage. You know, later on you realize that it's an important gauge to tell how people are doing. But I think that restaurants should pay their staff a living wage. If they did, number one, would they go out of business if they paid a living wage? And then number two, if they did that, and then I, on top of that, now I could pay them 5 or 10%, or maybe 10% should then be the standard. So I wonder what the feeling is
sure.
about that. Would they go out because of... people got paid a decent wage?
Well, Paul, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Michael Lynn, I mean, it should be said, if we're talking about servers, waiters, waitresses, that they get generally paid below minimum wage. And the idea of a tip is to get them closer to minimum or beyond.
Except in states like California and Washington and a number of other states where the state minimum wage is different and higher than the federal, and where there is no separation between tipped and non-tipped occupations. So waiters in California are getting the same minimum wage as everybody else in California. And yet those restaurants don't go out of business. Right. And presumably service. I haven't actually seen any studies comparing service in California versus elsewhere. Service isn't different. They still have tipping in California, and people tip roughly the same amounts in California as they do elsewhere in the country.
Thanks for the call to Radio Times, Paul. But I wonder whether the idea of 10% or 15% or 20%, and I was reading something actually in Esquire, and the writer of the article said, did a server work less because I ordered a $40 bottle of wine than if I had ordered a $400 bottle of wine? The idea is, you know, 20% of a $40 bottle of wine is $8 for $400, it's $80. I mean, does it make sense to have that percentage of a bill?
I can see arguments against it, and you just gave a really good one. I'm not sure exactly why we settled on a percentage of the bill, and I'm not prepared to defend it.
Mm. Okay, well, let me see what Beth from King of Prussia has to say. Beth, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi there. Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Well, it's funny because I'm actually Australian and American. I'm a dual citizen, and I spent some time at university in Australia, and of course there's no tipping there. And before that, for 7 years, I was a waitress and very much depended on tips. And your first caller said a lot of it. It's true, you get tipped very poorly by some people, and it's usually the ones who run you around the most and are the rudest, and they tip the worst. And then the ones who are lovely, you know, like your guest is on, you know. But I think part of the thing is, as a server, you have to be very, very good at people watching and knowing people. And like your guest said, you have to be able to judge very quickly, do they want you on top of them, or do they want you to just kind of leave them alone and know these things. But I always say that the best tippers are servers, because we know how hard it is to do a good job. And the other thing I wanted to say was, in agreement with your other guest who was on, the restaurant manager, owner, if you have a problem with your server, you don't not tip. You talk to the manager, because if they're serving you badly, they're probably serving other people badly, and the manager will take care of you because that's their job, you know? So I just feel like there is never a good reason not to tip in this country. In other countries, it's different. But when you go to a restaurant where tipping is expected, you need to tip well, and 18 to 20% is the accepted minimum. And
sure,
if you don't want to tip, then go to McDonald's.
Fair enough. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Michael Lynn?
Absolutely.
Sure. Michael, we're almost having a break here, but seems like she makes some cogent points.
Yeah. I don't have anything to dispute.
Nothing to dispute there? All right. Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about tipping. Are you a good tipper? Do you automatically tip a certain percent at a restaurant, or does it depend on the kind of service that you get? Our guest, Michael Lynn, is a professor of consumer behavior and marketing at the Cornell University School of Hotel Administration. He has published dozens of papers on tipping, and we wanted to do this program because we saw that some of these high-end restaurants are getting out of the tipping business, and by that I mean replacing the gratuity with a service charge. What do you think about that idea? 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Tyler School of Art Alumni Association supports WHYY and hosts the Art Market at Tyler today and tomorrow. The Art Market at Tyler, a retail arts and craft show, takes place on Temple's main campus. Details at alumni.temple.edu/Tyler.
Supporting WHYY, the Children's Beach House, and the third annual Plein Air Brandywine Valley, a painting and photography competition, exhibition, and sale. For 1 week, 100 painters and photographers will interpret the beauty of the Brandywine Valley. Their work will be judged, on display, and available at the opening gala Friday, October 25th at the Winterthur Museum in Wilmington. The art show and sale continues throughout the weekend and is open to the public. For gala tickets and schedules, pleinairbrandywinevalley.org.
One man in Washington who speaks to a higher power.
It's time for our lawmakers to say enough is enough.
The chaplain of the U.S. Senate, Barry Black, applying the power of prayer on the very divided Senate floor. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, PNC Wealth Management. With over 160 years of experience, their team of financial professionals is committed to helping clients achieve their financial goals. More information is available from John Conaway at 215-585-5438.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're talking about the pros and cons of tipping from the wait staff and customer perspectives. Our guest is Michael Lynn, and we've got calls that stacked up here at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Adam to join us. And Adam, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just had a comment and a question. I recently had an experience when I was at a restaurant, and I typically walk in, start at 20%, and then depending on the service may scale my tip higher or lower. We left about 10% on just drinks for some relatively slow service, and then we were followed out of the restaurant and kind of asked by our waitress what she did, was this just a mistake, and why we only left 10%. We ended up just to end the conversation, the awkward interaction, giving her additional money and pretending it was sort of a miscalculation. So I guess my question is, what can we do to kind of change the expectation that, you know, I'm automatically going to get 18 to 20% and it's not going to be based on my service?
Well, you know, Adam, I have a question for you. Did you just not want to talk to her and explain to her, you know, the service was rather slow and that's why we gave a lesser tip?
Yeah, it was just a very awkward social interaction, and I guess rather than having that face-to-face awkwardness, we prompted to just play it off as a mistake and end the interaction. And I guess that goes into the comment that your guest was making about the social value of others.
And you gave her $5?
Yeah, we gave her an extra $5.
What do you think of that, Michael Lynn?
I think that if her manager knew she was accosting customers in that way, she wouldn't hold her job for very long, nor should she. That's inappropriate behavior. Tipping is voluntary in this country. You're not obligated to leave anything. But I think that it's fear of that kind of interaction or fear that the server's thinking those thoughts, even if she's not going to accost you with them. It motivates a lot of tipping. And that's why it's a net drain on social welfare.
Adam, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Jennifer from Baltimore has to say. Jennifer, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just had a quick comment. I was a server for about 7 years, everything from the diner atmosphere, and then the last few years that I was a server, I was in fine dining. And I also eat out a lot myself, and I really enjoy that. But one thing that I notice is I'm constantly critiquing the service in my head. I never openly do it, but I'm often disappointed with the service, and it's frustrating because I always think, I feel like I don't get as good of service that I used to deliver. So at one point, I was tempted to leave a not-so-good tip, and then I reminded myself that I always said I would never be that person no matter what. So what my protocol is now is I always leave anywhere between 18% and 30% if I get really good service. But if I get not so good service, I'll still leave the 18%. But what they missed out on is if I get really, really good service, I'll leave a really great tip. But in addition, I'll write an email to a manager and tell them how great of service I got. And I know that really helps service out a lot.
Sure.
I never write a bad email. Actually, the last email I wrote was not at a fine dining place. It was actually at a Red Lobster. I just had amazing service. I couldn't believe it. So I took the time to write that email, and it helps them. So that's my protocol with tipping.
And we're losing you on your phone there, Jennifer. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. And, I mean, it's interesting, Michael, is that she uses the tip, to, in a sense, to reward good behavior. And if it's really, really good, she gives close to 30%. And she also sends an email to the restaurant to say how great the service was.
I'd like to wait on her.
Me too.
Because I think I'm a good server.
Yes, yes. Do you think there? I mean, do you think we're at a cusp, a point where, and especially I'm thinking of credit cards, which people use obviously more and more. The tip is included there, so there is a bit of a paper trail about how much someone is getting tipped, rather than cash on the table. Do you think that in any way is going to change how the government, the IRS, or even restaurants begin to look at tips?
I don't think so. It's if anything, it makes tipping less problematic for restaurants, less problematic for the government, right? The tip income is the single biggest source of legal undeclared income in this country.
Wow.
More than any other source of legal income, that's the one where people underreport and get away with it. And you're right, because you can increasingly people are paying with credit cards or other electronic payments where there's a record, the restaurant knows how much the server's making. They're obligated by law to pay Social Security and other taxes on those that tip income. And it benefits them to have that information.
Mm.
So the fact that we're more and more electronic payments doesn't make it less likely, that we would have tipping. I think it makes it less problematic from the restaurant's perspective and therefore more likely.
And let's be honest, when there's tipping and it's cash, it's generally under the table, into the pocket, and it doesn't get declared.
Exactly.
Let me see what that looks like. Yvonne from Fairmount has to say. Yvonne, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Maury. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
I have a lot of experience kind of in this world. My father was a professional waiter when I was growing up, spent a lot of time in restaurants, probably too much time. But then I got into it as a young person and made good money at it. And now I go out to restaurants a lot and spend a lot of money on tipping and so forth. And so I have kind of a mixed bag of feelings about it. My father worked at a time when the taxing on it, he got it, but mostly like what you just said, it was not declared. So he made good money and he saved it. I saw a lot of people in the industry when they get this cash in hand, they just blow it. I think that's really a sad thing that, it's sometimes easy money. And then making it myself, I did really well as a young person, working in restaurants. It was awesome cash and good money. And now on the other end, I'm spending a lot of money tipping. I like to go out to eat. So it's kind of a, it's a catch-22 because now, I go back and forth with whether the tipping thing is really valid or not. But I do feel that if you go out and you get, takeout and you go to some place where you're just picking up food, you don't tip. And going to a restaurant and getting the service, I do feel has a value, and it's a special service that I'm going out and sort of requesting and wanting to get served. So for me to pay something for that is valid.
Sure,
and
I hear. Now I hear you. No. I hear what you're saying, Yvonne, and let me get Michael Lynn in on the conversation. Interestingly, talking about. Her dad as a professional waiter, obviously someone who had probably did this their whole adult life. And our guest, Daniel Patterson, was talking about treating his wait staff and frankly, everyone that works in his restaurant as a professional. Is it that we don't think of servers and people that carry our luggage in hotels, we don't think of them as professionals?
Many of them aren't. I believe that tipping makes it harder to get a professional permanent wait staff because the income is not predictable. You can't go to your bank and say, look, I make this much each year. Give me the loan so I can buy a house. Let me borrow money to buy a car. It's harder to document your income and your credit worthiness. And so I think that there are professional servers, but there are probably not as many as there would be if we had some other way of compensating servers.
It sounds like what you're really saying, it's we really need to rethink this issue because there are consequences and probably financial economic consequences of having so many jobs that rely on tips.
Oh, absolutely.
And I mean, is it a matter of a law? You know, I mean...
Oh, how do you go about redoing this?
Well, something like that, yeah.
You know, I'm not really sure. I doubt that you can make tipping illegal. There were a number of states... I don't remember exactly when. I want to say around 1930, maybe 1940, there were about six states in the United States that tried outlawing tipping. And ultimately, the courts ruled those as unconstitutional. So I don't think you can literally outlaw tipping. But what we could do is eliminate the tip credit so that all servers are making the same minimum wage as any other worker. Mm-hmm. And that takes a little bit of the pressure off of customers to leave really generous tips. But I'm not sure how you could eliminate tipping in this country.
Well, let me get back to our callers. We have, it looks like Jim from Ventnor joining us on Radio Times. And Jim, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on the program.
Sure, go ahead.
Both of you. So I travel extensively internationally. I probably take 8-10 trips a year, and also lived over in the UK. And my experience at restaurants of all levels is that there's much higher level of service in this country than we see in other parts of the world. And I guess my question for Michael is there any, that's my anecdotal view and things I've heard from other people, is there any scientific support for that? And I guess my point would be that part of why we have such good service in this country is because tipping is a normal part of how we support servers. So I'd be interested in his views on that.
Yeah, and it's an interesting sort of anecdotal observation. So Michael Lim, what do you think?
I don't know of any studies making cross-cultural, cross-national comparisons in service. I'm a little wary about accepting U.S. citizens' judgments about tipping abroad. I know I had the same experience going to Switzerland. It seemed to me the service was slow, and I had to call them over to bring the check. Yeah. Whereas typically in the States, it would be brought, not too much longer after I got the food. And certainly when the server saw that my plate was clean, they would clear the table and bring the check. But then I talked to locals, and their attitude in Switzerland is, we don't want the server to rush us out. And so service standards differ around the world. And that a citizen of the United States that's used to our service standards and expectations, that they go abroad and experience what they regard as lower quality service, doesn't mean it's lower quality from the local standards point of view. So it's very difficult to make those kinds of cross-cultural comparisons. As I said, I have done some research within the United States comparing tipped and non-tipped restaurants. Service is better in tipped restaurants. Service is also better in tipped cruise lines than in cruise lines with automatic service charges. But these effects are not huge. And there are certainly restaurants with automatic service charges and cruise lines with automatic service charges that manage to deliver very, very good service.
Jim, thanks for the call to Radio Times. We got an email from Helen from Wilmington. She says, I have the impression that there's a wide variation whether a guest leaves a tip for the person cleaning the room after they check out. Since many of these housekeepers are low economically based, it seems unfair. And I think this gets to the question about, who is supposed to be tipped? And there aren't any sort of rules and regulations about that, it seems.
Well, there are social rules and regulations, and you can find about them by looking in etiquette books or going online and tipping and searching for tipping norms. And there is a norm. You should tip the hotel maid a couple of dollars per night that you stay. Depending upon how you ask the question and who you ask, maybe half of people, a third to half of people actually do that, but there is a norm that you should tip the household maid the hotel maid.
Let me get looks like Chris from South Jersey to join our conversation. And Chris, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a relative who's in the business, and he likes to tip 35-40% at the end of dinners. And it gets a little ridiculous sometimes when we're out to eat because most of my family, good tippers, we tip 20%. What do you guys think about that sort of thing? We're having a little difficulty eating in restaurants because we do not want to give 40%. We can't afford it most of the time, but we run into problems with that, and I just wanted to know what you guys think about that.
And Chris, just very briefly, why does your relative tip 35 to 40%?
Because he's in the business,
okay.
Pretty much.
Well, and that's been a pattern that we've been hearing during this hour, Michael Lynn, which is that if you work in the server business or serving business, chances are you're going to be a pretty generous tipper. Although I say 35 to 40%, that's almost half your bill. That's a big tip.
That's extraordinary, yeah. Research shows that people with experience working for tips do, on average, tip more than people who don't have that experience. And there are people who will leave those extraordinary tips.
Is that a bad thing?
Hard for me to understand because I sure don't.
So what are you working on? What's your tipping research that you're working on now?
Oh, goodness. I'm right now trying to develop an overall theory of tipping that explains why people tip, why we tip some service professions and not others, and why tipping norms vary across nations the way they do. I want to come up with a theory that explains tipping at all of those levels.
Well, on that note, Michael Lynn, thank you very much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. He's a professor of consumer behavior and marketing at the Cornell University School of Hotel Administration. In fact, joined us from the studios of Cornell University. We also talked with Michael Patterson, a San Francisco chef and restaurateur of Qua. And that's a 2 Michelin star restaurant in San Francisco. And they have never used tipping there. They have a service fee instead. Go to whyy.org/radio. Times, and you can find out much more about this program, including Facebook, Twitter, email, podcasts, archives, all of that. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Debbie Builder, and Emily Bryant. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend, I should say.